ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So reading today from the 7th canto, chapter 13, chapter entitled The Behavior of a Perfect Person, text number 27. Kamasyatmano rupam sarve ho paratistano manasam sparsa jandrishtva Bogan swapsyami sambhisan. Translation. The actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. Therefore, considering the subject matter, I have ceased from all material activities and I am lying down here. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The difference between the philosophy of the Mayavadis and that of the Vaishnavas is explained herein. Both the Mayavadis and Vaishnavas know that in materialistic activities there is no happiness. The Mayavadi philosophers, however, adhering to the slogan Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, want to refrain from false materialistic activities. They want to stop all activities and merge in the Supreme Brahman. According to the Vaishnava philosophy, however, if one simply ceases from materialistic activity, one cannot remain inactive for very long. And therefore, everyone should engage himself in spiritual activities which will solve the problem of suffering in this material world. It is said, therefore, that although the Mayavad philosophers strive to refrain from materialistic activities and merge in Brahman, and although they may actually merge in the Brahman existence, for want of activity, they fall down again into materialistic activity. Aruhya Krichena Krishrena Param Padam Tata Patantya Daha. Thus the so-called renouncer, unable to remain in meditation upon Brahman, returns to materialistic activities by opening hospitals and schools and so on. Therefore, simply cultivating knowledge that materialistic activities cannot give one happiness and that one should consequently cease from such activities is insufficient. One should cease from materialistic activities and take up spiritual activities. Then the solution to the problem will be achieved. Spiritual activities are activities performed according to the order of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishna Nushilanam. If one does whatever Krishna wants, his activities are not material. For example, when Arjuna fought in response to the order of Krishna, his activities were not material. Fighting for sense gratification is a materialistic activity, but fighting by the order of Krishna is spiritual. By spiritual activities, one becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead, and then enjoy blissful life eternally. Here in the material world, everything is but a mental concoction that will never give us real happiness. The practical solution, therefore, is to cease from materialistic activities and engage in spiritual activities. Yajñārthāt karmano nyātra loko yam karma bandhana. If one works for the sake of pleasing the Supreme Lord, Yajña or Vishnu, one is in liberated life. If one fails to do so, however, he remains in a life of bondage. Read the translation once again. The actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. Therefore, considering this subject matter, I have ceased from all material activities and I am lying down here. So seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, I'll try to speak a few words on this purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Prabhupada in this purport is explaining very clearly what is the difference between the philosophy of the Mayavadis and the Vaishnav philosophy. The common factor between both these philosophies is that both agree that in materialistic activities there is no happiness. So at least on that platform there is a commonality. Everything else we know is completely different. So from a spiritual perspective, both the Mayavadis and the Vaishnavas, they have complete compassion towards the so-called karmis or the material sense enjoyers who are just passing through this human form of life without understanding the true purpose or why they have got this human form of life in the first place. Unfortunately for us, because we have this understanding, because we have this knowledge which is given to us in Parampara by Srila Prabhupada, at least through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, we come to understand from the life of so many of the characters who are playing a role in the Srimad Bhagavatam that materialistic life is only a life of disturbance. If we take the example of Mother Devahuti, she was the daughter of Swayambhu Manu, who was the king of the whole universe. And obviously she was brought up in great opulence befitting the birth that she had taken. And there was absolutely no want in her life. I was listening to a class of Srila Prabhupada where he was describing what sort of opulence Mother Devahuti was experiencing. At that time there was no concrete or cement. Everything was made of jewels. In fact, there was no electricity. There was no need for electricity because the jewels would be emitting so much of light that the whole place would be lit up as if it was day. And what to talk about thousands and thousands of maidservants to wait upon her. Nowadays, if you have one servant itself, it's a great thing. Very few people can actually afford to have just one servant. But she had thousands and thousands of maidservants waiting upon her. But when the time came for her to be married, her father had only one requirement as far as her husband was concerned. He should be a person who is able to take her out of the cycle of birth and death. He should be the one who will be able to take her back home, back to Godhead. So this was his only criteria. And simultaneously, at the same time, Kardama Muni is there in the jungles, in the deep forest, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead for 1,000 years. Just because he wanted a wife. So all of us who have a good wife have to understand that at least in the previous lives you must have done some intense meditation in order to... If you don't have a good wife, then you know that actually it's a very big karmic reaction that is coming upon us. So 1,000 years was what Kardama Muni was meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to get a good wife. And then at the end of this 1,000 years, was it 10,000 years? That's 1,000 years. Quite some time. So, at the end of this period, the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes in front of Kardama Muni and then he tells Kardama Muni that I know what you are praying for. what is the reason why you are meditating on me? And he tells Kardama Muni that in just a few days, a very exalted personality by the name Swayambhu Manu will come in front of you and he'll offer his daughter in marriage to you. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead was glorifying the qualities of Mother Devahuti. And exactly 2 days later, Swayambhu Manu came with his daughter and offered her in marriage to Kardama Muni. And after the marriage, Devahuti continued to stay back along with her husband in this deep, dark forest. There was practically no light. So from a situation of extreme opulence, she is now put into a situation of extreme renunciation. And her husband would go into samadhi for sometimes years together. And she would be so wonderfully serving him. She became very emaciated. She lost all her external bodily luster. And from a material point of view, she was not at all exhibiting the beauty that she had before she got married. And then finally, when the time came, Kardama Muni realized that his wife was praying very sincerely for a child. So then, understanding that the jungle is not a place in order to incite the mode of passion which is required in order to generate progeny, Kardama Muni, with his mystic abilities, with his mystic powers, created a huge aerial palace. Thousands of servants once again. So again, from a situation of extreme renunciation, she was once again put to a situation of extreme opulence. And then it's explained that she and her husband, Kardama Muni, Devahuti and her husband, for several hundred years, they were going about in this aerial palace from one place to another. This palace was equipped with all sorts of facilities for sense enjoyment. It was actually something like a heavenly planet in a miniature form. And after several years, Kardama Muni, in the womb of his wife, begot 9 daughters. And finally, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself came as a son. And immediately after that, Kardama Muni went to do his tapasya once again. So we see over here that even though Mother Devahuti, from a situation of opulence, she has come to renunciation, and then from there once again to opulence, she was actually unaffected. And then to her son, she inquires from him that, please tell me, how do I get out of the cycle of birth and death? This human form of life is so miserable, causes so much of pain. So please tell me, how does one get out of the cycle of birth and death? And similarly, we see from the life of Maharaj Yayati, who was also a great king. And somehow he was cursed to lose his youth. But still, because he had this desire in order to enjoy his senses, he approaches his son to exchange that old age for the youth of the youth. And his son complies. And then after that, for several years, Yayati enjoys material opulence, sense gratification. And then towards the end, he realizes that, what is the purpose? Why am I doing all this? So the pages of the scriptures, we have so many such examples of great personalities who have understood that this human form of life is not for sense gratification. The unfortunate part is that in spite of seeing, yet we do not see. All around us, we see so much of suffering. There is, in fact, only suffering everywhere for us to see. But yet, people are so much focused on somehow or the other, even within that condition of suffering, to somehow or the other try and make as much as possible, that they somehow or the other overlook it. Just last month when I was in Mayapur, I just had to go once to Navadvip by this boat. And whenever I would be in Mayapur, I would always wonder, what is it that people, that there's a pot that people would always carry on the back of their cycle. And I would always wonder, what is there in that? I was thinking, maybe it's chas, or maybe it's milk. So one person with such a pot on his head entered into the boat, and then finally I said to myself, oh, now I'm going to see what is inside that pot. He brought that pot inside the boat and kept it down on the ground. And then I could see for myself what is there in the pot. I don't know whether any of you have seen what is there. And the pots are all very similar. You'll see thousands of such pots going in the streets of Bengal. When you go in the car from Calcutta to Mayapur, you'll be able to see all these cycles with those pots in the back of the cycles. They all are the same size. And inside this pot were live fish. Have anybody seen it? And big fish at that. And somehow the market is more. I mean, you can fetch a higher price if the fish is live when it is sold rather than if it is dead. But yet, because this pot is so small and there were so many fish inside and all, most of the fishes were big, the fish hardly had any space to move around. And I was closely looking at this pot and looking at the fish inside, and practically all of these fish were half dead because there's no oxygen. Yeah? And this person, the fisherman, he sat down and then with his hand, he started moving the water inside that bowl. And I was wondering what he was doing. And then I realized that actually he was creating oxygen within the water. Yeah, if you move the water, if you create some turbulence in the water, then the oxygen levels in the water increases. And the fish, which actually looked half dead, suddenly started becoming very active. Yeah, because they could breathe once again. And then he stopped. And then again, the fish started gasping for breath. And I was just looking at the people around me. And I was feeling so sorry for this fish. And I was just thinking in my mind what it would cost in order to buy this fish and put it back into the water. But I was seeing all the other people around me completely disinterested. Right in front of their eyes, they are seeing living entities in such suffering. Can you imagine if we were put in such a situation? If we were to be in a bowl where there's no oxygen and we are practically gasping for breath, and somebody comes and turns that water a little bit, and then we are breathing a little bit, and again somebody comes, and again, you know, can imagine what's, and this would be happening to the fish right till the time the fish is going to reach its destination. God knows where it was. So this whole period, right from the time the fish has been caught, it is in such a state of absolute misery. So much of suffering. And yet, when this person turns this water, because the fish has got no intelligence, when he turns the water, the fish is so grateful, thinking, oh yes, now I'm able to breathe. And it starts frolicking around in that water with all the other fish. So people are seeing that practically living entities in front of them are dying. There's so much of suffering. And yet, there is no reaction. Somebody is smoking, somebody is talking about politics, somebody is talking about cricket or football or whatever. There is so much of commotion in the boat. Right from the time from Navadvip to Mayapur, I was this entire distance. People were talking among themselves. My whole attention was focused on the fish because I was just thinking to myself that if I were to be in the place of the fish, with so much of intense suffering, would my heart be changing? Would I be thinking about Krishna? Because we are so much accustomed to somehow or the other try to find some facilities, even within the situation of suffering that we are in. Like every evening, I go for a walk to this Hanging Gardens in Malabar Hill. Just a few days back, I was with Murari Gupta Prabhu also. He was with me. We're walking together. One gets a lot of realizations in a park where people come to do their morning constitutional or evening constitutional or whatever, just in order to maintain their body. Most of the people in the park were aged, and some of them were so old that practically they are on their stake. Some even have to be assisted. There is a servant who has to carry that person, hold his arm in order to make him walk, and he can barely walk. He just walks a few meters and then he has to sit down, and then he walks a few more meters and then he has to sit down. And so many sick people who come to this park. In fact, there was one lady that she comes every day to the park. She suffers from a very funny disorder. She's got a very funny disease. And by this disease, it's a very advanced stage of Parkinson's disease. Her entire body is keeping on moving. You know, so like hands are moving in one place, legs are moving in another place, and her neck is moving in the third place, and you know, she's got completely no control over her body. You know, it's a very pathetic sight to see. And the first time I saw her, I was wondering why she has come to the park at all. There's no need for her to come to the park to exercise. I mean, she's already exercising her body, you know, all the time. But then I realized that what is it that she was doing? She was in the association of some ladies, also very old. And what she was talking was absolutely, you know, at her particular age, her particular situation, I was thinking that she should be only chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. What else can one think at that particular point of time or in that situation? But she was talking Prajalpa. She was just talking all sorts of nonsense about her relatives, about her friends, about her social life, and about her, you know. As far as the talking was concerned, she was able to talk perfectly, except that her body was completely uncoordinated. So even in that situation, when a person is so in such a pathetic state that he's got no control over his body, still he wants to come to the park and do some ishtagoshti with her friends in the evening. And also we have a lot of young people who go about in the park. These are the hip crowd. So they are the ones they have the latest music playing out of their ears at loud volumes. So anybody passing by the side of them is also able to hear what music they are playing. Right? Fully made up, young people. And you know that these people are really living their life to the hilt. They are absolutely enjoying themselves as much as possible. And what is funny is that they are seeing all these aged people, they are seeing these people who are so sick coming to the park, and yet there is no transformation. There is no effect on their consciousness. They are thinking that this is not going to happen to me. I am going to live a life like this throughout my life. I am going to be young throughout my life. So the material nature and Maya is so powerful and so strong that somehow or the other she completely covers you in a mode, puts you in an ignorant state. And even though you're seeing, you're not able to see. And in fact, if you go to some of the most beautiful places in the world, actually, like Hawaii, or you go to, there is an island off the country of Malaysia called Langkawi, which I would say there is heaven in this world, then it is like that. Absolutely temperate climate, very, very scenic. It's an island located in the middle of the ocean. So many 5-star hotels. And people flock to these places just so that they can get the maximum out of nature, Mother Nature. Mother Nature gives, has abundantly given to such a place. I remember I had gone for a conference in 1999. There was an Asian conference hosted by a company over there. And it was supposed to be a 3-day conference. So we landed over there and we were allotted our rooms and then we refreshed ourselves, then we came and then we participated in the lunch. And after that, there were supposed to be some presentations which people are supposed to make about their respective countries. So after the first presentation, everybody heard the first presentation. Then the person who was supposed to make the second presentation didn't get a chance at all to make the presentation. Because everybody else said that what's the point in hearing all this? We have not come over here to Langkawi to hear this. We have come here for a higher purpose. So by public demand, the whole conference was shut. There was no further presentations that were made by anybody, including me. And everybody went about their respective activities and, you know, try and get the maximum out of this place. So since we were tourists, so naturally we could appreciate the beauty of the place. But the locals who were in that place and who were staying over there for generations, they were not as happy as the tourists. In fact, they were in a suffering condition. Because this place actually comes to life only at night. Now, like all these places which are for intense sense gratification, daytime is not the place where the activities are there. There's no significant activities in such a place during the daytime. It comes alive at night. All the bars and all the restaurants, throughout the night, there is so much of activity that is going on. So the locals, for them, they sleep during the day and they work during the night. And this has been happening for generations from generation to generation. Right? So you can imagine what is the mental state of a person who works at night and sleeps during the daytime. Right? He is an absolute tamagun. Right? They go to sleep at about, just when the sun rises, they go to sleep. And when the sun sets, all the activities begin over there. So really on the faces of the people who are the locals, one could really see what extent they are suffering. There's so much of intense suffering that they're experiencing. They're giving pleasure to others, but within themselves they are suffering. And but when we go over there for a few days, then we think, oh, this is such a heavenly place, this is such a wonderful place, let us get the maximum out of this. Somehow by Prabhupada's mercy, some sort of realization had come upon me and I was just looking and seeing the reality, the stark reality of the situation. The stark reality of the situation is that people in such a beautiful place, in such an exotic island, where people pay hundreds and thousands of dollars per night just to spend one night over there, there's so much of suffering. And I'm sure if you go to any of the other places where there is, you know, facilities for enjoyment like this, if one goes to Hawaii or one goes to Acapulco, now, these are the places of intense sense gratification. The situation would not be much different. So Prabhupada is saying over here that unless and until we are situated in a proper spiritual consciousness and doing something which are positive, doing activities which are positive, there is no way by which we will be able to get over our attachment to material activities. Because by nature, our propensity is to be attached to material activities. By nature, our propensity is to enjoy the senses. And whenever we get even a slightest opportunity, unless and until we are properly trained, the senses are going to take us right across to the place where there is enjoyment. Because as Prabhupada would say, we have been doing this for millions and millions and millions of births. The soul by nature is pleasure seeking, but because it is connected to this particular body and this body identifies itself with this material nature, this propensity to enjoy is constantly there within us. But if we take the same propensity and dovetail it in Krishna consciousness, by serving the devotees, by coming before the deity and appreciating the beauty of the deities, by reading the scriptures, by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Then we'll be able to situate ourselves properly in the required consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada here not only makes that particular point regarding how to situate ourselves in a proper spiritual consciousness, but at the same time he says how the philosophy of the Mayavadi is incomplete. And for any lay person, like when I came into Krishna consciousness, there was absolutely nothing on my slate. When I was young, it was supposed to be a fad to be an atheist. You never believed in God. At least I grew up in that particular age, in the 70s, in India, at least the place where I lived in Goa. It was a fad not to believe in God. We might be even visiting temples, but then we never accepted that there was a God. God never existed. So when I came into Krishna consciousness, that was a time when I knew no philosophy. There was no Mayavad philosophy, there was no Vaishnava philosophy, when there's no existence of God, how can there be existence of a philosophy? So we were fortunate that when we came into Krishna consciousness, we were right from the beginning told that the Supreme Lord is a person. He is a personality who can be worshipped, who one can relate to. And once you understand the Vaishnava philosophy, it is practically impossible for you to once again appreciate the Mayavad philosophy, where it says that the Lord has no form. How can you worship something that has got no form? I remember once when I was the initial days of my Krishna consciousness, and I had this question also, because I was told, at least as per my upbringing, that the Lord has a form and the Lord has got no form. It's easier to worship somebody who's got no form than to worship somebody who has a form. And that was at least the philosophy that was given to me when I was small. So I would be arguing, how is it that the Lord has a form? And why do we insist that the Lord should have a form? What is the reason? The Lord can be formless also. It's also possible to worship a Lord which doesn't have a form. And then this particular analogy was given to me, which really struck to me as the essence of this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And I was asked this particular question, that your son, if your son did not have a form, would you be able to relate to your son? Would you be able to love him? Would you be able to appreciate him? Have a relationship with him? So, the whole way, the way in which it was put across was so convincing that after that there was no looking back to even think about the Mayavad philosophy. And actually, if one really looks at the Vaishnava philosophy, you really start wondering, how is it that thousands and thousands and thousands, millions of people actually in India, if you go, practically the whole of South India is filled with Mayavadis. Right? They might be actually doing deity worship. I was told that Kanchi, which is one of the seats of deity worship in South India, we have Shiv Kanchi, we have Vishnu Kanchi. So in this temples, actually, the pujaris, I mean, I don't know how far it's true, but I was told that the pujaris are actually worshipping. I mean, they have such elaborate deity worship. They're worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead only with the intention of merging into His effulgence. So from an external point of view, you wonder, I mean, you can't even understand, because the whole thing is so covered up, that you look at this person and he's doing such elaborate deity worship and you think, my God, he must be really loving the deities. The deities, you know, it's having such a nice relationship with the deities and, you know. So he must be a personalist, he must be a Vaishnav. But then you actually come to know that he is doing all this only with the intention of merging into the effulgence of the Lord. Merging into the Lord. So then it's easy for us to comprehend, how is it that a person gets into this philosophy? Because on one hand, he is seeing that there is such elaborate deity worship, which itself is so attractive,
That is what is really soothing to the heart, and that's what everybody wants to do. Just look at the deities and really appreciate them. Right? So on the one hand, you have that wonderful deity worship. And on the other hand, you have a philosophy which says that I'm doing this deity worship just so that I should merge into the effulgence of the Lord. Right? So, then you think that this philosophy must be right. Because you have such elaborate deity worship, the person is having such a wonderful relationship with the Lord, everything is so pleasing to the heart, and this philosophy is that ultimately I should do this in order to merge into the effulgence of the Lord. So then you get carried away by this philosophy. It's so easy to be convinced by this philosophy. But on the other hand, when you come to this Vaishnava school of thought, and they tell you that you have to have a relationship, that the whole purpose of this deity worship is to increase your relationship with the Lord as a servant. Because constitutionally, the nature of the soul is to serve eternally. So when you're given that philosophy, and you compare with the philosophy of the Mayavadis, where that person loses his identity altogether, then you realize that this is far, far superior. The constitutional position, the constitutional nature of the soul is to serve the Lord. Because eternally we are servants. So this is a basic philosophy that Srila Prabhupada is explaining in this particular purport. The difference between Mayavad philosophy and the Vaishnava philosophy. Where the Lord is a person, you can have a relationship with the Lord as a person. You can worship Him as a person. Because your constitutional position is always that of a servant. So the servant duty is to serve. And how can you serve unless and until there is a person who is in front of you? So many of Srila Prabhupada's purports we see where he very, very, for our own benefit, explains this distinction between the Mayavad philosophy and the Vaishnava philosophy. So that we are never bewildered. Whoever may come to us and preach to us whatever he wants. I remember once my parents were inclined towards a particular religious organization. And one sadhu, one sannyasi from that particular organization came to our house when we were staying in our earlier apartment a few years back. And of course, he was a Mayavadi. He was completely preaching Mayavad philosophy. So anyway, he came to our house and he saw deities and, you know. So he told my mother that, oh, you have such beautiful deities at home. You should worship the deities. And he was telling me, explaining to me, and you know, as usual, when sadhus come home, we take a humble position. So he was trying to tell me how it is that when we actually worship the Lord, with what intention we should worship the Lord. And he was preaching to me his philosophy. Or he was trying to preach to me the philosophy. But I told him that, you know, we don't understand all this heavy philosophy, what you're trying to explain to. I mean, it's nice to hear, but I'm not able to understand. The only thing that I know is that our spiritual masters have told us that we should worship the deity form of the Lord. That's all. So when I told him this, immediately he just kept quiet. I mean, he didn't have anything further to say. Because even when a Mayavad comes across a Vaishnav, he understands that beyond a particular stage, you cannot preach to them. Because they are so much fixed up in worshipping the deity form of the Lord as a servant. And then just as he was going, he told us, you know, the deities will take care of you. Just worship them with love and devotion. I was happy that at least for some time he was talking Vaishnava philosophy. So they try their level best to approach us and try to convince us about their philosophy. But if we are really firm in our understanding of the philosophy, then there's no way by which they can convince us. Of course, it doesn't mean that we should associate with them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us that never ever associate with a Mayavadi. You never know how you might just transform your consciousness. So we keep our distance. We understand what their philosophy is. We do not certainly listen to their preaching. It can be very, very dangerous. But that is one of the ways by which you can approach Krishna. There are so many different ways. One of the ways to approach Krishna is through the Mayavad philosophy. But Lord Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's a very, very difficult path to follow. The impersonal worship of me is very difficult. So why not take the personal worship of the Lord, which is made so easy? Particularly in this age of Kali Yuga, just by chanting the holy names of the Lord, we do not do anything else. It's impossible for us to do anything else in this. Actually, in this age of Kali Yuga, deity worship with all the care that one needs to take is so difficult. But yet, this chanting of the holy names of the Lord can be done so easily. Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Harer Nama, Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. So we are very fortunate to be connected to this Vaishnav philosophy, Vaishnav system, with complete clarity how to make advancement in our spiritual lives. We'll stop over here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Grantrar Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.